Today is May 7th, 2014, and this is episode number 253 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, William Wyndham's acting coach. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
You know, I'm thinking if people could listen in on our pre-show stuff.
Well, they wouldn't listen to the actual show.
Pretty much, yeah.
Don't you think I know that? They used to listen, but not anymore. William, can you give me more?
I know. We recorded and we recorded, but they just weren't there.
Our listeners begged. They pleaded with me. I couldn't.
And just so you people know, that's pretty much how our pre-shows go. Right there.
They say there's no devil, Jeff.
But you have seen it.
I have.
Straight, yes. Out of hell.
Exactly. Exactly. Love that episode. Love that episode of Star Trek.
That is an absolutely awesome episode.
You know, and I got to say, man, I have derived endless hours of juvenile entertainment reenacting that incredibly bad scene from the Doomsday Machine. But that scene aside, the guy, William Wyndham, man, he is just awesome. I just love him in the role of Commodore Matt Decker, especially once he takes control, once he decides to, you know, get his crap together and takes over the Enterprise. He's just so powerful.
He is. Yeah. He just exudes power.
He exudes authority. And you know, the little standoff between him and Spock, he's fantastic. He's just fantastic.
He is. And the scene that you're referring to, where we first meet Commodore Decker, and he's totally flipping out.
Yeah, he's a wreck.
Yeah, I can imagine. They probably did a couple takes, and then the director said, you know, go crazy, just over the top, like the entire universe just exploded around you. What? Let's see what we get. And he does that, and they're like, let's just stop there.
Well, I've always joked that he graduated first in his class from the William Shatner School of Overacting. But like I said, he's fantastic in the rest of that episode. Love it. I'm gonna go watch it again after we're done recording. Matter of fact, let's just cut it here. I wanna watch it right now.
Oh, no problem. And that's this week's Apple science fiction show.
We should do the show.
You do realize that we're going to delay you from watching Doomsday?
Yes.
And that shows the dedication you have.
Exactly.
The love that you have for our listeners.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, let's jump right to it. Like, what are we, 4.5 minutes into the show? Let's jump right to our first topic.
There is some irony there.
Yeah. Which one do you want to go first?
Let's talk about the med tech stuff.
Okay, let's do that. So Reuters did this piece looking at all the medical hires that Apple has made, especially in recent months. And you know, at first, my take on it at first was that. The medtech or I said biotech, and one of our readers corrected me and said it was medtech, and that is a more accurate assessment or more accurate label. But the med tech industry is tense. They're nervous about Apple. They're rattled because, you know, Apple's been poaching employees left and right. And
not just any employee, though. Like, top executives and the top brains in the health and fitness markets.
Right, right. That is very true. Some top designers, and of course we have top experts in things like sensors and stuff. And more recently, Apple's been hiring like chief medical officers. It was Masiano. What's the name of that company?
Oh,
it's a good thing I did my research.
Yeah,
it's a good thing I read an article about that this week.
I know. Good thing. Also, good thing that you're up on your Star Trek episodes.
Yeah, you know that. I got that down. I can tell you everything about the Game of Thrones and about Lord of the Rings, but you know, this day job business.
I know. Sometimes day jobs totally get in the way of entertainment. I hate when that happens.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm glad you feel my pain. So we've got... Oh, I don't even have the article pulled up. This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. It's a good thing that our listeners aren't going to hear any of this.
I know. Well, see, this is one of the great things about having our interns, because when we're done, all we have to do is walk away from the studio, and they take care of the edits, and... And that would great.
That would explain some things. All right. So, yeah, I had it right the first time. The company's Masiano. The person that Apple hired from Masiano was their chief medical officer. I don't have the name right in front of me. But, you know, Joe Chiano was quoted by Reuters as saying, Apple's just buying people. I just hope Apple is not doing what we're doing. Some of the talent Apple has recruited has access to deep wells of trade secrets and information, all of which is just nervous speak. You know, first of all, mm-hmm. Apple doesn't buy people.
No, they don't. They buy the talent they need for the projects that they're working on.
Yeah, Apple's reputation is running extraordinarily lean, not just buying people, right? And Apple also doesn't have a known history. I mean, if Apple has done this, we don't know much about it. And I think that we would know about it because people would be screaming bloody murder. But Apple doesn't have a reputation of abusing trade secrets from its hires.
I agree. If Apple had been doing that, we would know, because there would be lawsuits and
yeah, justifiable lawsuits.
Yeah, ugly articles in tabloids.
Exactly. So, but and I'm not really coming down on Mr. Chiano, the CEO of Masiano, because I'd be nervous too if Apple was A, poaching my employees, and B, had my industry in its crosshairs.
Is it wrong that in my mind, when he talks, he says, "Whoa, like they're taking our employees. They're totally poaching, dude."
Yes. That is in fact wrong, Jeff.
And yet, I can't help myself.
Whoa. So anyway, that was my take at first. My take at first is that Apple is rattling the industry and they're nervous. But then I started thinking a little more about it. And one thing that was clear to me is that the medtech industry knows, it intuitively understands, if not knows, that something that Apple's technology competitors, consumer electronics competitors, don't seem to understand. And that is that when Apple is going to do something, if they're going to bother to release a new product, they're going to, as Dave pointed out to you and I earlier today, they're going to identify the pain points and they're going to do something completely disruptive in a brand new market.
Yep.
And you look at Apple's competitors, like Samsung, and Samsung sees trademark for iWatch, and Samsung reads all the same rumors that we read and cover, and Samsung's reaction is to release the Galaxy Gear, a bad companion device for a mediocre smartphone. And it's, you know, just thinking within the box, the words are escaping me, but it's just such the wrong way to think about Apple. If Apple releases a product called the iWatch, it ain't gonna be a smartphone companion. It's not gonna even be a smartphone extension. It's not gonna be a Pebble. It's going to be something else. And the medtech industry seems to understand that. They seem to understand that Apple is coming for that industry. That's a brand new industry where Apple does not currently play. And that's the kind of thing that Apple does. That's how Apple disrupts. And remember that CEO Tim Cook told us at the shareholder meeting in February that the product that they were working on in Arizona was going to create a new ecosystem. It was a huge revelation. I rushed home to write that.
You did.
Funny enough, it wasn't the big story of the day, but that's the one that I thought was going to be the big story of the day. And so new ecosystem says, again, new industry. And then we have another piece of the puzzle. This came from talking to John Martellaro in a conversation yesterday morning. Apple, at first, you know, 12 months ago, 18 months ago, 24 months ago, we were hearing about Apple hiring sensor experts and hardware experts. And, you know, the people who engineers. And the stories that we've been getting for the last, say, 3 to 6 months have been these doctors and sleep experts and chief medical officers. These people aren't going to be working. These people were not brought in late to the game to develop the device. They're being brought in to help develop the platform, that new ecosystem that
Tim Cook told us about. I like how you put that. They're here for the platform. You know, I think that the medtech industry is a little more aware of Apple's role in markets that it moves into than other competitors had been. And I'll use the smartphone market as an example. When Apple introduced the iPhone, all of the other smartphone makers scoffed.
And everyone scoffed except for Apple's fans.
And that should have been a big red flag for all of Apple's competitors when we're all like, yeah, bring it on. But what ended up happening is exactly what we have now, which is Apple became a dominant player in the smartphone market and completely changed the landscape. And I think that that where the players in the smartphone market really couldn't see how this is going to play out, I have a feeling the medtech market, they get what this really means to them. And they're scared because this could create a fundamental shift in the way they have to do business.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's look at something that you have covered in depth, which is Nike and the Fuel Band.
Yes.
Right? Nike killed development of the Fuel Band, and we found this out, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago?
Right. And if we go back farther, Apple hired away a couple key employees from Nike's fitness team and hired the same person, Jay Blalock,
who, yeah, I think so,
is the guy that helped design the Fuel Band. He didn't actually work for Nike, but he was contracted to work with Nike for that design.
And Tim Cook sits on Nike's board.
Right. So Apple's brought over these people from Nike. Now we have this thing where they are essentially killing off their Fuel Band product and are going to focus just on their software.
Yeah. What's that software going to work with?
Well, Nike CEO did say that that his company has always had a very strong relationship with Apple, and he's excited about where it's headed.
Yeah, so Nike, our point here, folks, is that Nike either knew, because Tim Cook told Nike, because he is on the board. I have no idea how that works. My guess is that Tim Cook recused himself from discussions of the fuel ban, but when the board talked about it, but I don't know this for a fact. But anyway, Nike either knew or saw the writing on the wall that Apple was going to be providing the hardware that they wanted their fuel platform to run on. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think you're right.
And so, you know, it's just like all the pieces are coming together. All the pieces are coming together. The medtech industry is scared, and they frankly should be. It's not that Apple is going to put all these other companies that are already in this new space out of business, but Apple's going to change the rules because that's what Apple does.
Now, I think this has the potential to be really interesting in a positive way, because instead of having a situation where we have all of these companies laughing at Apple and then getting caught with their pants down, we have an industry that's sitting back going, oh crap, this could be a big issue. And so they will be looking now to figure out what it is they can do to remain competitive. I think we could see some really cool stuff come out of that.
That is true. Hopefully we will see just that. That actually, there's a lot of potential there. I completely agree with you.
Yeah, starting off with a more proactive approach as opposed to the myopic denial that we saw in the smartphone industry, I think there's a lot of potential here.
And regards to the iPad too, everyone scoffed at the iPad.
That's true. Well, and we can go back even farther. Everyone scoffed at the iPod
and iTunes. And the iTunes Store. And the App Store.
And yet, here's Apple raking in record profits and growing market share and selling more all the time. And yeah. How about that?
How about that? And how about Samsung, my perennial punching bag? They're going to... First of all, the Galaxy Gear, LOL. That is going to be the LOL product of the decade, I think. And it was just such a reactionary, I don't have the words to express my feelings on this. Samsung is
so... Do interpretive dance.
Well, okay, I am right now. Samsung is so desperate to be perceived as an innovator. And the problem is that they're not innovative. But they want people to think of them as being innovative. Like, they actually use the words in a Galaxy S5 commercial, a recent Galaxy X5 commercial. They say, the most innovative. And, you know, my feeling is that when you have to say it, it's probably not true when it's something good about yourself.
Sure, but if you're trying to use... I'm sure some people take this in a way I don't intend, but when you're running a propaganda campaign, you use the words that you want people to associate with whatever it is that you're pushing.
Yeah, that is a fine point, and so far they're failing in that. Well, I don't know. I say that there are people who bizarrely think that Apple is somehow the copier.
You know, there. I think that even though the holy wars of the Mac and PC days are behind us, there are people that still will get very emotional about whatever platform or company it is that they like or hate in the tech world.
And that includes Apple fans. That includes us.
Sure, except we're right.
Well, exactly. We do bear the burden of being correct in this particular issue, but
this is the cross we bear.
Exactly. But so anyway, you know, Samsung is so obsessed with being perceived as the innovator that they are not, that they released the Galaxy Gear to beat Apple to market with the smartwatch. Of course, you know, again, the funny thing is that the iWatch isn't going to be at all what the Galaxy Gear is. In fact, Samsung has only proven that their path to success lies solely in waiting to see what Apple is doing and then stealing it and then trying to do it cheaper.
You know, I liked in your piece about all of this, the quote from the attorney that has worked for Samsung and for Ericsson, and how he said that Samsung never saw a patent that they didn't want to use, even if it wasn't theirs, or something to that effect.
Yeah, and he also said, we were going to talk about this a little bit later. This was in a Vanity Fair piece, a Vanity Fair profile on Samsung, but he also said that he's worked for Ericsson and he's worked for Samsung, and that Ericsson couldn't tell a lie if their lives depended on it, and that Samsung couldn't tell the truth if their lives depended on it. Of course, that's just one man's opinion. But it certainly jives with my take on reality.
Yes, and there we go. Now we've given people a little bit of foreshadowing for
So the Galaxy Gear, LOL product of the decade. Samsung is going to embarrass themselves even further by having a medical related announcement in the last week of May, and a desperate ploy to beat Apple's WWDC announcements. But of course, it doesn't look like Apple's even going to be announcing the iWatch at WWDC.
No, I would be very surprised if that happened.
Yeah, all the credible, very, very credible reports have leaked that Apple will not be doing that. Of course, you know, who knows? Maybe those were all false plants. Samsung is going to embarrass itself, and Samsung is going to again prove that it should really wait until Apple shows them what they should be stealing.
I think you're partially wrong. I don't think Samsung is going to embarrass itself, because I don't think Samsung sees what it's doing in a light that it could construe as embarrassment. Instead, we will be embarrassed for Samsung.
Well, split hairs, well refined, well said. I don't know.
I know how much you enjoy splitting hairs. So,
I do. Yeah. No, that's a really good. That's a really good distinction that you made. So yeah, Apple's coming. Apple's coming into space, I suspect they are going to have as big a hit with whatever this product is going to be. It's going to be as important as the iPhone, the iPad has been, the iPod before it, iTunes before it.
I think that's very likely. I think right now we're sitting in that eerie calm before the storm.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of companies that are in the fitness tech market and in the med tech markets right now that they're just huddled waiting to see what happens when the storm finally hits them.
Yep. Well, should we just kind of sort of segue right into that Vanity Fair piece?
Yeah, let's go ahead. We've made people wait long enough.
I guess so. So Vanity Fair did this profile on Samsung, looking at the company's track record of deliberate IP infringement, and then a strategy of countersue, delay, and eventually settle at the very last possible second once their products are going to be pulled from the market, or if their products are going to be pulled from the market. And it was a 5-page spread. It was a really nice in-depth piece of reporting that was ostensibly based on or caused by sparked by the ongoing lawsuits between the current lawsuit between Apple and Samsung. But it really was an expose on just what a bottom-feeding corporate douchebag of a company Samsung is.
Yeah. And it isn't just in the smartphone and tablet markets. This is apparently what they do just across the board.
It is. And, you know, Vanity Fair didn't mention, and I didn't mention, the patent infringement that Samsung has been accused of engaging in by Dyson, the vacuum cleaner company.
Yes, one of our listeners pointed that out to us.
Yeah. And so, you know, in addition to... So what Samsung does is it looks at what the competition is doing. It then copies whatever it feels like it wants to or needs to, and then proceeds to use its ability to bring economies of scale benefits to the equation and take market share away from the actual innovators. And then they get sued, and they lose, and they either pay a fine, or in some cases they have faced import bans, and then they've settled with the company that sued them right before the import ban was going to be imposed, so that they don't actually have to get an import ban. But you know, so now that company has gotten maybe tens of millions of dollars, but in many cases, you know, Samsung has already basically beat them.
Right, because Samsung owns the market anyhow. That's what happened with Pioneer.
Yeah, Pioneer. There's been ongoing issues with infringing on Sharp's intellectual property in the LCD market. There was some issues with CRTs going back to the 60s. You know, and then also part of this profile was Samsung's long history of bribery and other forms of corruption, especially in Korea itself, bribing prosecutors and judges, and also in South America. You know, the author looked at some charges by a prosecutor who went to work for Samsung, who then detailed to other prosecutors, like his own efforts to bribe prosecutors, and how the whole thing is just swept under the rug, and then how Samsung chairman ends up getting pardoned by Samsung's president at the time. This is a bottom feeding corporate douchebag of a company,
and it's unfortunate because consumers, well, they're just caught in the middle of all this. And a lot of consumers, they have no idea what's going on. They just know that, oh, here's this thing that's like an iPhone, but it costs a couple hundred bucks less. I'll get that.
Right. And let's make no mistake about it. Today, the Galaxy S5 is not very iPhone-like. It may possibly infringe some Apple patent somewhere, but it doesn't have the look and feel of the iPhone like the original Galaxy S did. The original Galaxy S looked exactly like the iPhone.
It really did.
The first version of the Galaxy Tab looked like the Apple's iPad, you know, to the extent where
even packaging.
Even packaging. Judge holds up the Galaxy Tab and the iPad and asks the Samsung attorney if he can tell the difference between
and
the two
devices.
Not. And he couldn't from 10 feet away. And, you know, it's so while today's products don't look like the iPhone, Samsung only has market share in the smartphone market because it copied Apple's iPhone.
So really what it comes down to is Samsung isn't good at innovating.
At all.
But they are really good at seeing what features are marketable.
Yes, yeah. So, like what Apple showed in court, and of course, it was Friday, right? So since our last show, jury found Samsung infringed on two Apple patents, three Apple patents actually. It was willful infringement. You know, Apple has shown in court consistently now that Samsung, compared the iPhone to their product and identified 126 points where the iPhone was better than their device, and then they set about to copy as many of those 126 points as they could, including the look and feel, including the way the icons looked, including functionality like the bounce, including functionality like the side, slide to swipe, you know, all these things that they deliberately copied in order to make their phone not stink. And when the iPhone came out, Samsung was not even in the top five in smartphones.
No.
The smartphone market was a tiny market at that point. It was dominated by Nokia.
Yeah, there. Well, and BlackBerry.
BlackBerry.
At the time,
of course,
RIM.
Of course, you're right. Dominated by RIM and BlackBerry. But actually, Nokia was the worldwide leader. RIM had the U.S. and Canada. And a strong position in the rest of the world. But Nokia actually was Symbian, actually, for whatever reason, had most of the market in the global market. And Samsung was an also-ran that was usually in other when you look at like IDC and Gartner reports. And they decided that they needed to copy the iPhone. They did it. And today they're the number one smartphone seller. And that success, even though it is not as directly copying the iPhone today, was built on copying the iPhone. You wouldn't have the Galaxy S5 that you know today if Samsung hadn't done such a deliberate job of copying the iPhone with the Galaxy S.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
And disgusting, in my opinion. But, you know, I'm obsessed with fair play. I'm obsessed with I'm obsessed with earned reputation. I'm obsessed with you know, earning your profits and not stealing stuff from other people. I'm you know, to me it's important that people not pirate music or books or movies or TV shows. Because if everybody did that, you wouldn't have any. You know, pay for what you get and get what you pay for. And, you know, these are things that are important to me. I know that not everybody feels the same way about it. But I don't like the kind of company that Samsung is. I do not like it, sir.
So, just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
Do you know if you have any Samsung products?
If I do, they're in the kitchen.
And I've been sitting here racking my brain trying to think if I have any. And I'm pretty sure I own nothing from Samsung.
I had a GS4 that Samsung actually sent me. I don't think that's likely to happen again, by the way. But I had a GS4 and I tried to use that piece of crap. I tried to make it my phone and I couldn't. I just couldn't do it. I could not handle the TouchWiz interface. It's just so, to me, it was freaking awful. It's a fine device. It's a nice big device if you want a big screen. It's a, you know, which is the one quote-unquote piece of innovation that Samsung actually has brought to market, which is bringing larger screens than Apple is bringing. You know, if you want Android, quite frankly, the GS5 today, or the Note 3 if you want a phablet, or the HTC One. I think the HTC devices are much more interesting, but you know they're fine devices if that's what you want. But I couldn't use the thing.
And
I don't have it anymore. I sent it off to Dave to test and play with and talk about on the Geek Gab.
And I'm assuming it has not won him over, because he doesn't brag to us about how he's now a Samsung user.
It's true. Of course, you know, that device is now more than a year old. Or I guess it is a year old. Did it come out in May of 2012 or 2013?
Yeah, it's about a year. I think it's about a year old.
Because the GS5 is just now being released, right?
In the last
month or two?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, so the GS4 is about a year old.
Okay, and see, and there's an interesting point. A year-old Samsung device is, for many people, really not worth anything. A year-old Apple device still is.
It's true. A two-year-old device, three-year-old Apple device, a four-year-old Apple device, still worth money. If you have an iPhone 3G sitting in your, or 3GS sitting in your drawer, You can get a few tens of dollars from Gazelle for it, or on eBay at least.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, try that. Try getting some money for Galaxy S.
They'll send you a bill.
It's probably true. It's probably true. All right. Well, I think this bloody corpse of a horse here is this topic. So shall we move on?
I now have this horrible image in my head. Horrible image. I'm not going to describe it to everyone.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay, so what else do we have?
Well, let's talk about J.D. Power.
Okay, that sounds like a happier topic.
Yeah, J.D. Power gave Apple the J.D. Power Award for customer satisfaction on the iPad today.
So, yeah, so that's the tablet that people prefer the most.
And it's the tablet that people actually use once they buy it. In fact, that was one of the very interesting things to me to come out of their press release. They talk about the fact that cheap tablets have gained prominence in the tablet market, and that there's a direct corollary between that and the fact that customer satisfaction rates on tablets overall have declined.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? People are buying a tablet because it's cheap, and then they're disappointed with what they got.
Yeah, proof. Living proof. Living proof that you get what you pay for.
Yeah, and in this case, they're paying for disappointment.
They're paying for disappointment, that's right. So, another interesting thing about this. So, Apple was first, I think in the fall survey, I believe Samsung was first, like for the first time. Right? Do you remember that?
Oh, right. Yeah, and that was interesting.
Yeah. And, but Apple regained the first place, but Samsung was second. And Asus was third, Amazon was fourth, and then Acer came in at a very distant fifth. So there's a couple of aspects of this. One, if you compare Apple, Samsung, Asus, and Amazon, their scores look very close.
Yes, they do. Their overall scores look very close.
Yeah, 830 for Apple out of 1,000. So, you know, consider that like an 8.3 out of 10. 822 for Samsung, 820 for Asus, and 817 for Amazon, and then Acer is 769. We'll just forget about them. So that looks like, wow, boy, howdy, the smartphone market, or the tablet market is just, you know, running neck and neck, and Android has really, really closed the gap in usability, and no. It's not the case, because we have two bullet points here. First of all, there's another chart that actually spells out overall satisfaction, cost, ease of use, performance, physical design, and tablet features. And when you look at those, where there's I don't know, how would you describe that? The circles.
The dots.
Dots. So
I would call them dots.
You get five dots. And the higher your score, the more dots you get. Apple has five dots for everything but cost. So that's overall satisfaction, ease of use, performance, physical design, and tablet features. They get two dots, only two, which is the lowest that anyone actually scored in the top five for cost.
So people love what they get with an iPad. They just don't want to pay that much.
Yeah, they don't want to recognize the fact that you get what you pay for. And you look at Apple's competitors. Actually, let's look at Samsung, who is number two. Samsung gets a 3 out of 5 on satisfaction, 3 out of 5 on ease of use, 3 out of 5 on performance, 3 out of 5 on physical design, and 3 out of 5 in tablet features. They get 4 out of 5 in cost.
So everyone's like, it's good enough.
It's good enough. It's good enough, but I don't like using it.
And that's a problem.
Yeah, that there's a disconnect there. There's a complete disconnect. And as a matter of fact, for what it's worth, Amazon got 3.3322, but for cost they got 5. So, oh, I love how cheap it is. It's just I don't want to use it at all.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, how about that? So, another thing, another bullet point is that if you go back to this, and we've got both of these charts in our story about this. If you go back to the second chart where we looked at those numbers, 830, 822, 820, 817, it looks like they're neck and neck, but the way J.D. Powers ranks everything, Apple's got a 5 out of 5, and then the next three all have 3 out of 5, which is not neck and neck.
No, not at all. And then when you get to, what is it, Asus, the last one?
Acer.
Yeah. Then there are 2 out of 5, aren't they?
Yeah, there are 2 out of 5. So it looks neck and neck when you look at the bar. But when you look at the ratings, the actual ratings, which include more than just the statistics that they're showing us, Apple is crushing the competition.
Right. And... at least for now, though, I'm betting that that their competition doesn't care because they're selling products. People just aren't happy with them. So as long as they can continue to sell those products, regardless of whether or not people like them, they keep making money.
Right. And this dovetails into this other recurring theme that we've talked about for years, which is what do people do with their non-iPads?
They put them in a drawer.
You know, we've seen this again and again and again. You got usage statistics that show Apple's devices being used and the competition's devices not being used, be it web traffic, be it app downloads, be it paid apps, be it internet traffic from apps, be it whatever. We always see the iPad with this massive ownership of usage, but less than, you know, like what is it, you know, somewhere in between 35% and 50% at any given moment of market share of new devices sold. Well, this is yet another example of that, where people don't like their non-iPads, but they love their iPads.
Yeah, people need to really stop and think about how they're spending the money.
Yeah, probably not our listeners.
No, probably not.
Our listeners probably get it.
Yes, but our listeners have friends that need to have an intervention.
It's true. It's true. It's, I don't know. It's really, really interesting. This issue that non-iPads have with people liking it, you know, it's just...
Well, I find it interesting how many people I have encountered that don't have an iPad, but they want one, and they bought something else instead. And I hear the same thing over and over. Well, it's not as good as I thought it would be, but I could afford it.
I don't get me wrong. I understand. Money is money. And. Apple's pricing is out of the reach of many consumers. This is a reality.
Yes,
but you get what you pay for.
And we are talking about products that, in the grand scheme of things, fall under the disposable income side, because you don't need an iPad to eat.
You don't need an iPad to eat.
Yeah. No. Now, my feeling is, if you really want an iPad, but you can only afford Kindle Fire, set your money aside, and then just keep socking away a little bit more until that's enough money for the iPad that you really want, and then just go get that.
Yeah, and if you're wanting to read Kindle books and you can't afford an iPad, get the Kindle Paperwhite.
Yeah,
because that's a fine e-reader.
Yes, yeah, totally acceptable e-reader. And so you spend, what, $100 on a Kindle White?
Not even that.
And you spend less than $100 on a Kindle White. Now you have your e-book reader, and now you can start saving up for your iPad.
Yeah.
And people are probably sitting there going, wow, like, we really needed financial advice from you, Jeff.
Yeah, right. Or, yeah. Are you guys recording this from your Lamborghinis? I didn't think so. That's right. Yeah, don't take financial. We have no idea what we're doing.
No, we have absolutely no idea what we're doing. It's a wonder we can feed ourselves.
it is very, very true. So why don't we move on to the do not tracking story that you wrote for us?
All right. So that is a thing where a lot of people are getting like really worried and upset and paranoid. And I'm seeing other people saying things like, yeah, whatever, it's no big deal. The deal is that that emails have surfaced showing communication between top NSA officials and CEOs of major tech companies. And the emails are showing that there were these meetings that were happening where the top tech companies were discussing we don't know what with the NSA. And these discussions have been going back since at least 2009, and presumably earlier. And that and so what's coming out of this, really, I think, is that there is new ammunition to be used by people that already don't trust their government or the major corporations in this country.
True, but we don't know what those meetings were about.
No, we don't. Now, in some cases, we have ideas, but those ideas are based on just words that were used in an email that may or may not mean what we think they mean.
So what are those words in the emails?
So what we're looking at, the emails talked about security-related discussions. And yeah, so we don't...
Go ahead.
I'm probably going to say what you were about to yap at me with. But we don't know what those security discussions really entailed. Yeah, we don't know.
It could have been, in what ways can we cooperate with handing over our customers' data to you? It could have been that. Or it could have been, look, you guys are out of control and you need to stop trying to get this information just to have it.
Yes. Or it could have been, hey, big companies, we have been tracking these security breaches, and now we're telling you about them so that you can address those.
Yeah, or it could have been, we want to hire you to help us manage our data. Or it could have been a meetings to like about warrants that had been properly served. There's a lot of different reasons for these giant companies to meet with the NSA that aren't necessarily how can we cooperate with you or you have to cooperate with us or any manner of topics aside from cooperation.
Yes, the meetings did not have to be nefarious. Although that's exactly where people are going in their minds. And it's unfortunate. And for a lot of that, I blame the NSA because they have created a scenario or a situation where people just simply don't feel comfortable trusting them because they are gathering so much information about so many people already.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I we discussed this earlier today, and my little joking scenario was that Eric Schmidt meets with the NSA and the NSA says, we want all this information we want to know what people are saying in an email. And Eric Schmidt looks at him and says, oh, that's cute. You're interested in what people are saying. Well, we already know what people are thinking. So cute. You NSA people are so cute. And that goes back to Eric Schmidt actually saying that we know what people are thinking before they do.
Yes, and to a degree, he means it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, and to play devil's advocate to my own devil's advocate, it is possible that they were meeting to cooperate with the NSA and that all of this public business with a, we're not cooperating and we don't, you know, we only comply with the law and you know, we want the NSA to be more transparent. You know, all of that public statement stuff that we've heard from Apple and Google and Facebook in particular, it is possible that these meetings actually show that these companies were doing the opposite of what they're saying. I'm just simply contending they don't necessarily say that. They might, but they don't necessarily.
But, yeah, and honestly, for companies like Apple and even Google, I would be really surprised if later on it came out that they had been lying to us and had been very openly cooperating with the NSA.
Yeah, I suspect that Microsoft has willingly cooperated, probably more so than every other tech company. But I don't know that. That's just my gut feeling, because Microsoft has always sided with IP holders, you know, content makers, and the government over and the needs of ISPs, the needs of everybody but its end users. They've always sided with the other guys first. So that's kind of where my mind goes with Microsoft. But, you know, like Google, let's look at Google and Apple. They've been pretty consistent in saying that they have urged the NSA to be more transparent.
Yes.
Guess what? It takes meetings to do that urging.
Yes, it does. Yeah, you can't just say we're urging them without actually doing something proactive, like meeting with them to say, dudes, you really got to lighten up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if anything, finding out that there are meetings is consistent with what the companies have said publicly. And I think it's important. But, you know, your point that the NSA has acted in a way that has led everyone and their brother to not trust any of the parties concerned, it's spot on.
Yeah, and yes. And now the side effect of that is that when people hear that companies like Apple and Google and Microsoft and HP were meeting with the NSA, we immediately lose some trust for those companies too.
Yeah. It's true. And this has an effect on international business. You know, people in Europe, people in South America, people in Asia, they don't... Some people are less inclined to trust Google, Facebook, Apple, Microsoft, Intel, Cisco, etc. You know, all these U.S. tech giants. They are less interested in trusting them with their data because they are concerned that their data is being funneled directly to the NSA. Rightly or wrongly, they are concerned about it. And this does have an effect. And this has a snowball effect, too, because these people that are concerned about it, they end up giving their business somewhere else. And when they give that business somewhere else, that money ends up leading to more local outside the U.S. development.
Yes. And then that in turn means lower tax revenue.
Well, yeah, but what it means is the more important thing that it means is that the NSA is effectively fostering development of technology outside the U.S.
Okay, see, I was thinking about it from the politician standpoint, and you're thinking about it from a much more practical standpoint.
Yeah, just think about the fact that the U.S. is the technology leader of the world, period. Silicon Valley is the technology leader of the world, period. And this NSA nonsense is fostering an environment that could lead to that changing faster than it might otherwise have done so.
Yes, that's a really good point.
You know, and especially, let's say that you're the government of Israel. Or let's say you're the government of Russia, Putin's government. Let's say that you're the government of any country with any means whatsoever. You would be happy as could be to foster development of technology that's in your country, that's going to benefit your people, it's going to benefit your tax base, and take power away from the hands of U.S. technology companies.
Could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. All because the NSA lost sight of what they should do versus what they could do.
And unfortunately, it is so easy to lose sight like that.
It is easy to lose sight, but it's not impossible to keep sight.
I agree.
To keep track of that difference between what we should do and what we can do.
And in this case, I think there's a lot of choosing the path of what we can do that happened. And we all suffer for it.
Yep. Yep. All right. I think that we are apparently at a stopping point.
Yeah. I was just thinking, wow, what a sad note to end on. But there you go. Well, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm jgamut, both places.
And you can follow me on Twitter at tmobrian. That's Brian with a Y. You can follow me on my blog at geektales.com. And Jeff's over at freshbrewedtales.com. Our content is written by the good people at The Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
Now head on over to the iTunes store and rate our show, because that gives us a nice warm fuzzy feeling inside. Indeed. And stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at The Mac Observer. Mm-hmm.